I'm happiest in the saddle.
A fellow sportsman.
I am an FBI agent!
Great Scott!
What do you say we cut the chit-chat, a-hole?
Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria!
Come with me if you want to live.
Hello, and welcome to Retro Ramble. I'm Charlie McGee.
I'm George McGee.
And this time, it's 2024. We are retro-rambling back to 1984. Why could that be, George? What reason are we traveling back in time for some reason?
Traveling back in time. It's a biggie. It's one that people are, you know, our listeners are amazed we haven't covered so far. We've covered the bigger, more expensive sequel.
Dun, 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 dun.
But yeah, it's 40 years, baby, so it felt the right time to cover the original The Terminator.
Release synth.
Release Brad Fiedel.
Yeah, so I think we had our reasons for covering T2 first, and we knew all the way back then that we wanted to only cover this film on its 40th anniversary. But no, this
as I was telling a friend, we weren't sure how long the podcast was going to last, so we went big quite early.
Yeah, we did. We kind of shot our load very early on. But we're back on all things that revolve around The Terminator.
Plus, it's annual Arnie. You know,
yeah,
we make sure that we cover at least one Arnie film per year.
Per month,
as our doctor prescribed, one Arnie film at least one per year,
per quarter.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you want more Arnie in your life, keep listening. If you didn't realize you needed Arnie in your life, keep listening. And if you like the podcast, keep listening. So thank you to everybody who normally listens. This will be a 80s focused episode. 1984. Wow. Seems like ages ago. Because it was. So expect all the usual shenanigans. George and I are brothers, yada, yada, yada. Anything people need to watch out for on this episode?
I think we just need to do the standard disclaimer. If this is your first time listening to Retro Ramble, first of all, thank you for checking us out. So yes, as Charlie said, we are brothers. The purpose of this podcast is Charlie and I look back at the films of our youth. How they were made, do they still stand up, have they been remade, spun off into a Netflix series, etc. It is a light-hearted film review. It's not a in-depth critical appraisal, though I say we hope that, you know, we'll feed in some trivia about the film along the way. But yes, it's like catching up with an old friend. So there might be some swearing, there might be some bad impressions, but ultimately, we aim to entertain.
Wonderful. Affirmative. So, are we playing the trailer? Do we have something queued up?
I have the classic trailer queued up. So, I'm hoping it's proper classic.
Voiceover, maybe?
Yeah, I'm hoping it's Don LaFontaine, all that jazz.
Wow, I'm excited.
So I'm going to share my screen once you enable screen sharing. We do this dance every time.
Multiple participants have been allowed.
In the 21st century, a weapon will be invented like no other. This weapon will be powerful, versatile, and indestructible. It can't be reasoned with. It can't be bargained with. It will feel no pity, no remorse, no pain, no fear. It will have only one purpose. To return to the present and prevent the future. This weapon will be called the Terminator.
You're dead, honey.
day is it? The date?
12th May, Thursday.
What year? I'm here to help you. I'm Reese, DN38416, assigned to protect you. You've been targeted for termination.
Why does it want me?
Why me?
Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Terminator. Your future is in its hands.
Gotta love the 80s voiceover trailers. Nothing beats that.
I don't think I've ever seen that before. But yeah, I love it. That's proper, like, period, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Like, the way it builds up, like, it starts off like a documentary.
Yeah.
And then it, like, very quickly descends into a, let's show them the whole film.
Oh, thank you. It was quite well edited. It doesn't give away too much.
It doesn't give it any spoilers. It does give you the best line from Michael Biehn ever. Isn't that in the deleted scenes, though? The year thing? Oh, no, we're getting confused about the one where he's in the forest. That was the bit that's in the deleted scenes. Do you remember that?
I forgot that. But he is in the deleted scenes for T2, which we probably covered in our T2 episode. In the director's or special edition, whatever they call it, he comes to Sarah in a dream. So we do get Michael Biehn in T2.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Welcome to the podcast episode. So that was the trailer. George and I are already delving into the delights.
Trivia.
The trivia of The Terminator. So where is a good place to start, George? And I take it you remember everything we said in our Terminator 2 Judgment Day episodes. You're not going to repeat yourself.
Absolutely, Charlie. Absolutely. I did not say just before we start recording. I can't even remember what we said. I think because this film has quite a large bit of trivia about how it all came to be, and we probably did cover some of that in our T2 episode, I think let's jump back to first memories first, and then we can hop on the... hop in the time displacement machine back to Production Island.
Okay. Shall I go first?
Ganon.
Well, all I'd like to say is about this is that this would be one of the first films that I grew up with, I watched, I was terrified of. A long period of time passed, and then there was the excitement of the fact that there was a second one coming out and it was going to be the cinema, and it obviously ended up being one of the biggest films. One of the biggest films ever. It's in everybody who actually has an opinion about sci-fi that's worth respecting. It's in their top five, definitely. Especially sci-fi action should be. Anyway, it's a favorite. So that's what it meant for me. It was that thing about growing up with VHS and then just being at the age where I think I saw it in France with subtitles, you know. Terminator 2, that is. So that this has always been very special, but this was the indie art house. This really made me respect, I think, what we've talked about a lot, especially with sequels and everything, is the original, you know, because there's so much in this, and we cover this in our Patreon episode, which is available if you haven't checked it out, where we talk about all of the various sequels of Terminator, is that they all borrow from this film, the original. Some of them better, much better than others. Some of them pay homage, some of them do it slightly differently, but they all take beats from this classic original.
Yes, though I would say, and again, yeah,
that Genesis is your favorite.
Fuck off. I would say that, yeah, We get into it in the episode, but yeah, it obviously with T2, it seems like all the sequels are continually chasing and trying to re-emulate that. But
the T2 money.
but to get back to the Terminator or T1, I remember being terrified of this as a kid. But it was one of those sort of,
you've got to watch it, like, if you want to be like a proper lad.
But it was one of those things, yeah, you know, you look away at the scary bits, you know, like when
it was the bit with the eye. It was that scene was the worst, considering everything else. It was crazy.
And yeah, you know, again, we haven't talked about them for a while because we haven't covered such a classic. But yeah, I always associate this with our good friends and old neighbours, the Glendinnings. You know, this was on regular rotation in their
the Arnie rotation.
in their very well organized and labeled VHS collection. But I think I even talked about it in our Aliens episode, because usually it would be a weekend and James or John would be like, so what are we watching? Is it Aliens or Terminator? And you'd be like, and I'd be like, Aliens is too scary. I'm not ready for that. Let's go for Terminator. That's a little bit scary. It's a little bit horror, but it's also a bit of action and sci-fi. And it's Arnie. And I know he's ultimately a good guy. But yeah, I think that was the thing. I would have been like 7 when Terminator 2 came out. So I think
You were ripe to watching Terminator at 7 years old.
What I was saying was I was probably, I was 8. So I was probably watching, I might have seen Terminator by then, but I was watching Terminator just as Terminator 2 was coming out and that hype sort of thing. So my memories of the two sort of merged together. I remember there being a lot of excitement and it was like, oh yeah, oh my, but they're switching it around this time. But I still have very vivid memories of the first one and being, yeah, that little bit scared of, oh, this is quite a haunting movie. And it's the score, it's the fact it's all set at night. It's that unstoppable threat. It is, you know,
a chase movie.
Yeah, we'll get into it. It is essentially a slasher movie with a sci-fi twist. I think that is a bit like Alien and Aliens. I think there is an ongoing debate which film is better. You know, a lot of people say it's the original in both cases. I think, yeah, for me, I still do enjoy the scope of T2. I just think that the whole scale of it, it's Cameron at his peak, the fact that he takes all the stuff from T1. But again, like Aliens, you can't build on those things without a solid foundation, and it doesn't make it as good, because you need to rely on those things that have been established in the first part. So, but I think what I want to talk about in this podcast is just the sheer brilliance of James Cameron. And I think that will come through, you know, and arguably it is his debut film.
Yeah, but what's he made for us recently? I mean, are you trying to say he's like the most successful film director of all time? Wait a minute.
Which time?
Yeah. With Avatar and Titanic, the guy understands what the audience wants, but I feel this was in a moment where he was doing what he wanted to do.
Yes. So shall we get into it? Shall we hop in the time machine and head back to the early 80s?
Yes, we should. We definitely should. Are we going to production? Are we going on the conveyor belt in a factory setting to production factory island?
Yes, we are. We are. So, I mean, instead of me launching into what is your knowledge of James Cameron's beginnings?
Well, all I know is there was some funny, fishy business with piranhas.
Pretty fishy, what happened to me.
Exactly. All I know of this one is that it was made on a budget and that he was a student and I think a risk taker. I think you could argue what would be called today entrepreneurial and what was probably called back then ballsy. You know, he was like, that's what I see. Because I think all I would say, just to tie this back, to tie production conveyor belt factory of the future with what we were talking about in terms of first memories. This was probably the first, one of the first DVDs both George and I bought. I think we both,
yes, that's a very important thing to mention, actually.
Because we both bought the limited editions of this, and I'm sorry, listeners, to you can imagine the money we forked out, both on VHS and DVD. I remember buying this on DVD and Blu-ray, and I think we might have had it on VHS. So this film was probably like when a new media came out. I had a steelbook of this.
Yeah,
I had a limited edition of this in DVD. And I've still got a steelbook of both this and Terminator 2. So it was like...
Well, I'm pretty sure... Am I remembering this rightly? But Terminator on DVD, I think... Did I buy it for you for your birthday?
Correct.
And then did we go round to the Glendinnings and watch it on... James Glendinning and John Glendinning's dad had a new recently installed surround sound. And we watched it on their surround sound system. It was the first time I'd watched a movie in surround sound. And obviously
the bullet noises going to different speakers. It was ProLogic sound.
And it was my first experience of that. And obviously it was one of the first DVDs, the special editions, as you say, where they'd completely, you know, done a...
Remastered everything.
And it sounded phenomenal. And I think, both you and I were like looking around the room like, that's amazing.
Yeah. No, so I think that. But the other thing to take from that is the fact that we watched we didn't have a lot of DVDs at the time, so we watched all of the extras on it. We watched the deleted scenes. We this was a craftsman to get it back to Cameron that I was intrigued to know about. You obviously know a lot more than me, but I'm a guy who doesn't really read up a lot on directors. And way before Avatar or Titanic, this was like my favorite director. And just to disagree with your point earlier about Alien, I believe, unlike Terminator, that Aliens could exist completely on its own without the original. And I don't care what people say, because I think it's that good a film. I think there's enough setup in the beginning. Because the reason I stand by that is that I must have watched Aliens about four or five times over a 10-year period before I watched the first one.
So, I think it's more about her trauma, that you've got that whole thing of the baggage that she's carrying and taking into that. But this isn't about Aliens. This is about Terminator. James Cameron, a brief history. So he has always wanted to get into films. He's an avid fan of comic books. He's an artist. I think he did like some sort of like degree in mechanical engineering as well. But he ends up starting off in the movie business, working for Roger Corman. And for those who don't know, Roger Corman is sort of like the king of American exploitation movies. He had his studio New World Pictures. They would shoot quick and cheaply, but Roger Corman had a talent for spotting up and coming like talent. And when you worked on a Roger Corman film, you weren't purely just assigned to your department. It was very hands-on. So if you were, sometimes you'd be working on, you know, the cameras, sometimes you'd be working in the sound department, sometimes you'd be working in the model department. And so James Cameron started in the art department for Roger Corman, but he quickly learned on the job. So he learned about all the different sort of camera lenses and things like that. And he also did matte paintings. And I've got this beautiful book that some of my friends bought for me for my 40th, is The Art of James Cameron, called Tech Noir. And it's got loads of his concept drawings in. It's also just got some really nice behind the scenes stuff in it. And he also was hired, I think it was New World Pictures, so Roger Corman's place, they were hired. James Cameron did a lot of the matte paintings for Escape from New York as well. Yeah, he did a lot of work there, and he was obviously very eager and making his way, getting noticed by people. So he gets offered to work on Piranha 2, The Spawning, which was made by an Italian producer, or as James Cameron delightfully calls him in this book, an Italian fuckwit producer, who apparently had to use an American director to secure funding. So they hired Cameron to make this film, and he's fired after 4 days. This Italian producer takes over but keeps Cameron's name on the credits. But what Cameron would do is he would break into the editing suite at night and make edits where he could. And in James Cameron's words, he says, "The scenes that look reasonably good are mine. The scenes that completely suck are the Italian guys." And he said, "It was the stupidest story in the history of flying piranhas, but I was nothing, so I had nothing to lose." And that was it. He was just starting out and he was like, "This film's ridiculous, but it's my first thing and I'll give it a go." And so yeah, he's fired off that, but he's trying to make the best of it as he can. So he's stuck in Rome. He's trying to salvage the relationship with the producer. He's broke. He's staying in this cheap motel. He gets ill and he has this fever dream about a cyborg emerging from flames. And that's the starting genesis of Terminator. So he wakes up, he draws this image that's been in his brain. He pitches the idea to his friend, and then would go on to be a producer and partner, and also one of his many ex-wives, a lady, Gail Ann Hurd. So Gail Ann Hurd was again from working at Roger Corman's New World Pictures. She was Corman's former assistant, and she was keen to do her own thing and get into producing. So she, Cameron pitches her this idea, and she's like, "Yep, I'm happy to be your producer for it." So, but and Cameron's like, "Well, this is my idea. It's not just a script I want to do. I want to direct it." And she's like, "I will produce this film. I'll pitch it for you, but you've got to sell me the rights." So Cameron sells her the rights for $1 bill.
Wow.
And unfortunately, this will come back to haunt James Cameron over many, many years. And the ownership of Terminator gets very convoluted, much like the lore of Terminator does. So Cameron and Hurd formed a very successful producer director partnership. They would go on to marry in 1984 and were married until 1989. But Cameron acknowledges, I say, to jump back to what that point I was saying about it's a slasher film, Cameron is quite openly saying that he idolized John Carpenter. He said that he acknowledges that Halloween was a key influence on Terminator when he was writing the script. And the same way that Deborah Hill, John Carpenter's producing partner, was a sort of a leading woman from a production point of view, Gail Ann Hurd was keen to emulate that as well. So yeah, I think that's the thing about Cameron. He's very open and honest about his influences. But interestingly, and I think I did touch on this in our T2 episode, Cameron's original idea was to have two Terminators. You would have the T-800 at the start, which was destroyed halfway through, and then Skynet would send through the T-1000. But Cameron quickly realized that the effects at that time, because he'd done so much with Corman's stuff, and he'd seen the stuff in Star Wars and things like that, he was quite aware of what was possible in VFX. He's like, "This liquid metal is not going to be achievable." So he shelved that idea.
Well, and it would not come back to haunt him, but it would continue to come back, this idea of how many Terminators we're sending back. But what I love about this film is that I feel the, I mean, this was a almost a, this was an indie production. That's what
Yeah,
I mean. And like, it looks
absolutely.
so refined that if this was his indie, you can understand why he has the two most successful films ever. That he's given us so many great films, from True Lies to Aliens to this to everything else, apart from Avatar and Titanic, which have been stellar successes.
But I think that's the, it's down to that background, he cutting his teeth with Roger Corman, because they were on such tight schedules and budgets. He kind of knew what was possible in terms of, okay, if we can do this, we can do that, we can cut these corners, rather than some novice director saying, oh yeah, I suppose we can do that. I don't have any experience of special effects. I don't have any experience of lighting, of set design and things like that. But because they had to learn on the job at Corman's place, I think that's why it's... And I think even like Roger Corman said, he's like, I'm amazed you've made such a great film. And he's like, well, I learned it all from working on your pictures. That's, it's doing it efficiently. And again, we talked about it in Aliens, like even Aliens is a much bigger budget picture, but he's cutting corners there. I think they only, we talked about, they only had three full alien costumes, but the way he cuts it makes it feel like there's loads of them.
Yeah, and it's done so well and done so creatively. What I think is really funny and ironic about this is that you see when you're watching the Terminator film, when it's actually the robot stuff, he creates the feeling, the way that the legs are going up the stairs, it's probably just some human
guy
with a guy going up the steps, but he cuts it like that. And what I think is so ironic about how it comes full circle is that in the beginning, he didn't have the money to create the full effect,
Yeah.
All he had was Arnie. And what's funny about, we go full circle, by the time we get to Salvation, it's like, we haven't got Arnie so much, but we got a load of money to make it look like we can do anything with robots, and we can pull in a young Arnie. So I just think it's really funny that it just did this journey from being, I'm assuming it was like people moving the arms and stuff to make it look like it was a real robot, like on a shoestring, to, okay, we can do anything, with CGI.
Well, yeah, it's interesting the fact that he knew the limitations. So to talk about the special effects. So reference some other previous podcasts we've done. So originally for the Terminator makeup effects, he reached out to Rob Bottin. But Rob Bottin, I'm assuming,
making more thing stuff.
I think it was similar around the time he was doing pre-production on Terminator, was around the time the thing was being made. So I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some crossover there. But so Rob Bottin's not available. And then I think one of the next people, or the person that Cameron decides on, is Stan Winston. And he shows Stan Winston all these drawings. And as I say, like, Cameron's very methodical and is like drawing out, like, pulling apart the machine pieces and in terms of how the Terminator works and the hinges and body parts, it's all very detailed. And Stan Winston's like, yeah, I can work with this. But they had seven artists working for 7 months to create Arnie's prosthetic head and torso for that, just that scene where that we're talking about, the eye scene. And yes, it looks a bit rubbery now, and I think even Cameron acknowledges it, but it's still
impressive. It's impressive. Still,
it looks impressive for its time, and as you say,
it looks like
budget.
A robot. It looks like a robot.
But yeah, the bits where, yes, they created the actual endoskeleton, they did that from the torso up. So you see the behind the scenes shots, it's mounted on someone's shoulders. And so, yeah, they had parts of it. And as you say, they had legs, they had limbs, but they didn't have a full, I don't think it was until T2 where they made a full scale endoskeleton. But they actually, like Cameron said quite early on, he said, I knew we couldn't do the C-3PO thing. We couldn't do a man in a suit dressed as a robot because audiences wouldn't buy it. So he chose to do stop motion and a mix of... And again, it's a bit like that Jurassic Park thing. It's that mix of...
It looks real.
Prosthetics, and obviously it's not CGI, but and it's stop motion. And yes, the stop motion is a little bit shonky with the Terminator. It has data a little bit, but it's a lot better than seeing a skinny man in a robot suit in a shiny metal.
I totally agree. And also, if you've got to think about the target audience of the time, which were 8-year-olds, you know, it was perfect. Did I say 18? I meant 8 years old, because like we all watched this when we were so young.
Yes, yeah. And what the other thing that, again, it kind of looks a bit dated now, but again, for the budget of the film, is the future war stuff. And again, there's a lot of stuff that he learned on UL Pictures, that all the miniatures. So the miniatures were done by a company called Fantasy 2 FX, a guy called Gene Warren Jr. So yeah, they did the stop motion stuff for the Terminator, but they also did all the future war. And they talk about in the making
perspective.
All the perspective. So you've got like a massive, like a normal size human skull in the foreground. And then you've got all these little skulls that they've made that are the, like the size of like marbles, and the fact that they're like using loads of smoke and all these layerings of all the buildings. They've got rear projection, they've got front projection.
Pew 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 pew.
And again, they talk about like the hunter killers, that they would only be built in parts, so you'd only see, again, you like what you were saying before about, You only see a glimpse of, you see the tank treads, and then you see the turret, and then you see the lights.
The rest
moving,
is done in your head.
And it's all, you're connecting it in your head. You don't see the whole thing as a whole, but you're making up those bits. And yes, there's a little bit of shonkiness with the flying hunter killers. They move a little bit too smoothly on the wires. Like there's a little bit of like, but again, it's just phenomenal. For it's a total budget of I think $6.5 million,
and again, when you're only 7 years old, you don't notice the difference.
Exactly. I mean, and I think that's it. Even
any age, see this at the cinema, you're blown away. But at the time, you know, you were, there was nothing like
absolutely
this.
Like it's just so well efficiently done, and I think that's what in some ways hampered it, because the company that distributed it, Orion, they kind of saw it as just another B movie, another genre picture, and they didn't really put enough into the marketing of it. So it was, the Terminator was a smash hit. I mean, it made over $100 million, I think, domestically, and on a $6.5 million budget, that's amazing. And Arnie even says in his memoirs, they could have sold it a lot better, but in hindsight, if they had, Arnie's career might have been completely different. He might have been typecast as a villain.
Yeah,
because it was so successful.
Yeah.
So he's like,
and we wouldn't have had twins.
We wouldn't have had twins or Kindergarten Cop or Jingle All the Way. I think it is just, it's an amazing tour de force. Oh, no, the other thing that I forget, well, it is clearly a miniature, but it's one of those amazing things. The tanker explosion at the end. So originally James Cameron wanted to blow up a full-size tanker, as you would do if you're a film director. Yeah, I want to blow that up. But for some reason, the building that they picked was close to a LAPD or a military munitions like hold. So they're like, you can't blow anything up because it might, you know, there's a chance you could start a chain reaction type thing. So they rebuilt the entire building that the tank is in front of. They built a 4-foot miniature wall, and then they've got a 2-foot miniature high tanker, and then they blow the whole thing up. So it all intercuts perfectly. You see the tanker approaching this building, and then it cuts to a miniature that they've made of the building with the grass and the bushes and everything. So it's amazingly done.
But that's the art for me.
Yeah.
When you see, like, and like we talked about it, I think, in Superman 2, sometime miniatures are done really well, like Star Wars, Superman 2. Like, it was when they were at the height, and then I don't know. I think probably the best miniatures are the ones you don't notice, or the matte paintings in Tim Burton. You know, like, I just feel like this late 80s period was where they really knew what they were doing with physical effects. Like, no, this bit will be physical, and then we'll use a miniature, and then we'll use a matte painting. And it still looks good today, unlike The Phantom Menace.
Well, that's it. Like, I mean, we're jumping about a bit. And again, it's type conversation we've probably had in our Patreon episode. But yeah, you look at the later Terminator films and you lose that physicalness because they're relying on CGI, and you've got two people throwing each other around a room, and you know they're just two digital bodies, and it's not believable. There's no heft, and it's all just like, oh yeah, that's just clearly, you know, yeah, two digital dummies being thrown around a digital space.
And all you can rely on is the delivery of the lines by all the other actors. But more on that in our Patreon episode. So, okay, George. So here's Sorry, did you have something you wanted to say?
Well, we've talked a lot about Cameron, but we haven't talked about Arnold.
I think it's a good place to start. Can we start with that scene with the late but great Bill Paxton, where we first get to see Arnie in all of his naked glory?
And in Blu-ray, you even get to see a lot more of Arnie, even little Arnold dangling around. That was how I tried to sell it to my wife when I was rewatching this. It's like, yeah, I'm watching Terminator tonight.
Do you want to see his junk?
On the Blu-ray, you can see his willy flop about. And she's like, I was like, technically, darling, it is a love story. But yeah, she wasn't having any of it. So yes, let's because this is the making of James Cameron as a film director, as a tour de force. But this is also the film that cemented Arnold's career. So, but it wasn't originally all about Arnold. I mean, and many people know this, but James Cameron...
It was going to be Tom Selleck.
It was going to be Tom Selleck. Harrison Ford didn't want to do it. But yeah, no, originally James Cameron had envisaged his friend Lance Henriksen, who was one of the leads in Piranha 2, The Spawning. What are you doing piano hands for?
Piano hands from Hard Target.
Hard Target, of course, where he's really aggressively making love to that piano.
In a room by himself, looking at himself in the mirror, playing aggressive piano. Very strange.
We love Lance Henriksen.
Yeah.
So yeah, him and Jim Cameron are good friends. And yeah, Cameron's original idea for the Terminator was as it's described in the film, he's an infiltrator model. So it's the fact that he could blend into the crowd and take out anyone. And he wasn't a man mountain, an Austrian man mountain. So yeah, that was, and there's this concept art freely available online where Cameron's drawn the Terminator sketch where you can see the half cyborg, half man, and it's Lance Henriksen. And they were pitching it to studios, and Lance Henriksen was in character to help sell it in. But Arnie's name came up. There's conflicting stories on this, but Arnie's name was suggested by the general consensus is that, yeah, he was suggested by Orion, who were distributing the film. They were, you know, putting up a fair bit of budget. And by this point, Arnie had done Conan, which was a big success. And they said, oh, yeah, what about him for Kyle Reese? And Cameron was like, oh, that guy, that Conan guy? No, that's a terrible idea. So Cameron had already made up his mind before he'd even met him. But Orion were like, oh, please just, you know, do the courteous thing, go and meet him. And Cameron even says he had, like, plans to sabotage the meeting. And he goes to meet Arnie over lunch. And Arnie just keeps talking about how much he loves the script. And he talks about how fascinating the Terminator character is. And he keeps saying, you know, whoever you get, whatever they've got to do everything like a machine. They've got to turn like a machine. They've got to operate guns like a machine. And his interest is more in the Terminator. And Cameron suddenly has his brain where he was like, well...
The voice.
This is exactly how it should be played. And what about you? And Arnie's like... Oh, well, no, I didn't mean me. I just mean who, like, I think...
I'm the hero. I want to be the hero. This is my career.
And that's it. Arnie was just like, no, I'm just talking about whoever you take on. Because, yeah, Arnie was, as we know, you know, he's a smart guy. He's a very focused businessman. And he was like, me playing a villain? That's it. What's that going to do for my career? And his agent was saying the same thing. He was like, you'll just get typecast as a villain. But yeah, Cameron won it over and just saw it as and convinced Arnie as an opportunity for him to add range to his roles. Like, oh yes, you've done this. And Arnie was keen to do, in his words, like a modern contemporary film, because obviously he'd just done like Conan and
yeah.
And he's like, I don't want to just be seen as the Barb. And he'd done like some cheap westerns and Hercules in New York where he was dubbed and stuff. So yeah, he was keen to do a modern action film. But yes, Cameron had to take him a bit of time to win him over to say, no, actually, if you think about it, and even Cameron says, it made no sense whatsoever, but the beauty of movies is that they don't have to be logical. And even Michael Biehn says, it was like, well, if Arnold was playing Kyle Reese, who the hell was going to play the Terminator? Like, can you imagine, like, if it was Arnie versus Lance Henriksen? You're like, well, that's not a fair fight. It
looks like an old lady fighting off The Rock.
Exactly. So, but yeah, in true Arnie fashion, the man is all about, from his weight training, he trained for 4 months weapons training, and he learned how to strip and reassemble guns blindfolded.
9-inch plasma rifle.
only what you see, buddy. But I mean, yeah, he even said that he learned to fire guns without blinking. But you even see in the film, that's not the case. He's very focused. Like he yeah. is. And I think that's it. It's the fact that he's reloading whilst just continually staring forward.
Yeah, like a machine.
And the thing that, yeah, the one that everyone talks about where he's driving around the car park and the eyes are moving and then the head's moving. It's like a security yeah. camera type thing. It's brilliant. It's just little tricks that, again, they're all his ideas.
I was just saying, we bring it back to Dad, because I can just remember saying, well, how hard is it for somebody to play a robot? You know, and I was like, no, yeah. Dad, it is a talent. I mean, that's, sorry, acting, but like I can understand, like Arnie comes on the scene with his muscles, probably what Cameron was thinking, this guy's nothing but muscles, but you can't take it away from Arnie, the fact that he made this character, and it wouldn't have been, you can't imagine the Terminator being anybody else apart from him, you know, like maybe Lou Ferrigno could have pulled it off with his size, because it needed that.
But I don't think Lou Ferrigno could have pulled off.
He's got too much of a nice face.
Yeah, I just I mean, there's. I have got some very interesting coulda, woulda, shouldas at the end.
Okay,
but
before that.
But before that, yeah, it's yeah. So the interesting thing was there, because Schwarzenegger's star was on the rise. They were actually due to start filming in Toronto, Canada, in spring 1983, but then Dino De Laurentiis, the producer of legendary movie producer and producer of the Conan films, is like, well, if this Schwarzenegger's going to become a star,
I'm going to need a sequel.
Yeah, he's contracted to do Ooh. Conan sequels, so. De Laurentiis jumps in and is like, no, you've got to do a Conan sequel first. So Schwarzenegger has to do that much to... He's
was
not,
that Destroyer know. Or Sonya? Red Sonya?
No. So he did Conan the Destroyer, which I didn't realise, because I remember hearing the second Conan's shit, but even Arnie says in his autobiography that they retooled it to make it more of a family-friendly film, whereas the first one's brutal. The Conan the Destroyer is like a PG or a 12 or something, and it's just tanked completely.
I just remember Sonya, Barbarian and Sonya are worth watching. The Destroyer, not so much.
Well, I think Red Sonya, I haven't seen that in years, and that was, he was sold that, oh yes, you're just doing a cameo, and he's like, featuring, he's in like half the film or something. They really stretch out his material.
But I get to fuck about with Sly's wife, right?
Exactly. Exactly. That's another podcast for another time. So yeah, he has to go off and do the Conan sequel. So meanwhile, Cameron has to keep himself busy, and the Terminator project has obviously been getting buzz, so Cameron starts getting other work. And on the same day, he wins jobs for Rambo First Blood Part 2 and what's then called Alien 2.
Wow.
And he is promised by the producers of Aliens, if Terminator's a hit, he can direct Aliens. So once Arnie finishes Conan, by that point, they've got a little bit more investment and they decide to shoot it in LA.
Right.
So there you go. That is the chunk of the production chat. Apologies, it did go on for so long.
Okay, well, my question to you, George, is being that it's been 40 years, being that you and I have talked about this film a lot over the years, we've consumed the deleted scenes, we've watched the films, there's been a whole host of sequels and what have you, which we cover on our Patreon episode, which I think we'll just call Terminators, because nobody's used that for a sequel title yet.
Not yet.
Maybe The Terminators. What hasn't been said about the original that you feel needs to be said or you'd like to say?
I think it's just, yeah, it's an amazing example of what can be done on a small budget. And it's really, apologies if we have covered this previously, but yeah, it's, you know, people like John Carpenter are of a similar ilk of it's maximizing your budget and being a clever enough to director to say, this is all I need. Yeah, as you say before, Chad, I can crop in on this and that still gets, and I can edit this to create that sense of panic and that sense of scale and that sense of dread. And I think very few people do that these days. And obviously the film landscape at the moment is massively different. You've got low budget films, but then you've got your Marvels and your $200 million films on the other side. There's nothing really in between. And I feel like even though this was a low budget and it was Cameron's official debut, because of what he did, it made it feel like a much more expensive film. And again, he would repeat that magic with Aliens, making that feel bigger than it was. But then it's ironic how it's a low budget film and he can make use of his budget, but then he goes on to create some of the most expensive films of all time, but also the most profitable films of all time as well, or highest grossing, I should say.
But from a business point of view, I think you've answered your own question. It's like, why are they the most successful films of all time? They are the most successful films of all time because he is able to produce films of that quality that deliver though that profit,
yeah,
on a minuscule budget. So it's one begets the other. So yeah.
And he ultimately, he is a perfectionist, and I think that's it. Everyone talks about that. Yes, you know, we can wax lyrical about James Cameron, but everyone knows, and even he's not afraid to say he's a hard taskmaster. You know, even Arnie says, you know, he's the hardest experiences he's had on film, but some of the best experiences he's had as well. And I think everyone says that he is a hard person to work for, but the fact is he knows what everyone's like. He knows when someone's not pulling their weight and he can tell someone how to do their job better than him. It's not like, I don't like that. It's like, no, I know you're not doing that right.
Yeah. I think what's funny, to give you a bit of an inside track, listeners, is that a conversation George and I have had many a time, probably walking out of a recent Avatar film, whatever, is like, why didn't he make more films? And then George will say to me, because he's the maestro. You know, he's moved with the technology. You know, I think that's all I want to say about him, is that with right from this film, Terminator, where he was making on a budget and taking what he'd learned working, you know, like behind the scenes and in the art department, he's taken that. And he takes cinema to a new level. And I think that you've got to give respect to the directors that do. The Ridley Scotts, the Steven Spielbergs, and obviously, most recently, the Christopher Nolans, and the most exciting director there is at the moment, Denis Villeneuve. You know, so these guys are taking what's been done before and taking it to the next level. And so I got frustrated. Like, I was like, why can't Cameron have made as many films as Arnie?
Yeah.
You know, because such a talented director. But the reason he doesn't make so many films is he's so talented. So I think we're fortunate that Christopher Nolan is banging out a film every 2, 3, 4 years because Cameron took breaks. But when he did deliver, boy, did he deliver.
Or as I'm just listening to the new Alan Partridge audiobook, and he talks about watching Avatar, and he's like, as much as I enjoyed Avatar, I thought to myself, why isn't James Cameron, why doesn't he just not make another 4 RoboCop films?
Not at all related. Yeah, not at all related. So,
I think that's it. Like, it's, I think it's something we've talked about before. There's part of me that would like to see him delve into some other stuff that's not Avatar. That, you know, it'd be like, it'd be good if he was doing, okay, yeah, I'll do an Avatar film, a bit like Christopher Nolan did. He like, oh, I'll do a Batman film and then I'll do something else for me and then I'll do another Batman film. It'd be great if Cameron peppered his career with some other stuff.
Fan service is basically what you suggest.
Well, yeah, and he kind of seems to be exporting that out to other people. So he did Yeah, so he produced that, but Rodriguez directed it, and he did the same with Terminator, Fart Date, Dark Fate. I think, but because Avatar, he's obsessed with pushing the technology as far as possible, and it consumes all of his efforts. It's sort of like that's all he's going to be doing for the next, I don't know, maybe another, probably another 10 years. Which
he's made depressing. It. He's made it his project that he wants. Yeah. Because I think he's given himself a universe that incorporates sci-fi. He can do acting. He can do.
I don't think many people assumed he would repeat the success with Avatar 2, but I will be surprised if he does it again.
It's almost like the next film. The next film was the most important. It was like, we all knew he could probably take that sort of break and come back. People saw it again. So it's very smart marketing. But okay, so we've talked about Cameron a lot. We've talked about Arnie. Shall we talk about Michael Biehn a little bit?
Can we talk about Michael Biehn's hobo pants? Now, there is an internet meme that is like, he steals trousers off a hobo. He wears them for the duration of the film, and he's going commando, and then he sleeps with Sarah Connor.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Just think about where Mr. Winky's been in those hobo pants.
All I have to say in his defense is, can you imagine how hard it is in the future when you've got hunter killers, you've got normal human skulls, you've got miniature human skulls to walk around? You know, it's like you get back to the 80s, you don't know what year it is, you're just looking to get the sweet tang of connecting with another girl, you know. And I don't think he was thinking about his pants enough.
But he does have some, he has some fly Nike trainers. I think there's some product placement there.
Ka-ching!
But you know, he looks cool. He's got the trench coat, he's got the sawn off shotgun, he's a bit of a badass. And I think
I just remember us talking with James Clendinning, like having the typical 7-year-old conversations like, what's daddy's making? That's a pipe bomb. Can you really make those? You can totally make those. Should we try and make one? Yeah, maybe not. We might blow up the kitchen. But it was that.
you got any potassium nitrate and sugar? Yeah, no, I think, you know, Michael Biehn hasn't had the biggest career. You know, he's been in some big films. There's part of me that, you know, yeah, I feel like he has been a bit typecast, especially as an authority figure.
He's played his part as a Navy SEAL commando in at least 3 films.
But he's good in this. He's got, obviously, he has got the general exposition role. He has to do a lot of heavy lifting. And again, can you imagine if Arnie was cast as Reese, like doing all that exposition with his thick accent at the times, like
cannot be reasoned with.
I suppose Arnie does have to do that in T2. He has to do the exposition. But yeah, I think Michael Biehn does a great job. And he's talking about, like, oh, you know, it's cybernetic organism living flesh over an endoskeleton, and then he just, after all that, he goes, but I'm not a tech guy. It's like, hang on.
Yeah, I've just remembered all of this stuff, but I'm no tech guy. I'm just really hot and I'm going to bang you.
But the other line that he delivers that stood out for me, and Sarah Connor goes, well, what are you talking about? Nothing like that exists now. And he goes, it doesn't exist yet, but about 40 years from now. And I'm like, yeah, 40 years, baby, 40 years.
Yeah,
here we are.
Yeah, robots. Sex robot from the future.
Sex. Only one mission, to make love to one lucky lady. But yeah, I mean, I said, again, I forgot about the fun that is the Lance Henriksen and Paul Winfield as the weary detectives. They're just like, oh, God, got to speak to the press. And, you know, they're constantly smoking. They just
They're constant smoking. You've got the guy who would feature in like all in about four or five Terminator films in total. Dr.
Silberman, he's such a douche.
He is such a douche. Like, in every film, I think he plays that really well. I mean, we've talked about this film. I think some of our listeners might scream out in agony if we don't talk about the police station thing.
Well, Charlie, you're perfectly safe. We've got 30 cops here.
Yeah.
it's like, bum, 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 bum.
But this scene would redefine action film for me. Because then Stallone would make a film the next year. It's like, well, we're going to have you going to an island and killing like hundreds of people. You know, like it upped the ante. But for me, this scene was when it was still an original idea. It's like, you can't imagine one guy going in and, as you say, you're totally safe.
Well, it's interesting reading the interviews with Cameron. There's another I've got a couple of books on Cameron that I've got. If you're a big Terminator fan, it's worth checking out. There's the Terminator Archives by Ian Nathan. He used to be editor for Empire magazine, and he covers the first two Terminators in depth. And Cameron talks about how you, in terms of almost playing the Terminator as an anti-hero, in terms of the fact that they make the cops really inept. So when that scene comes around, you know, that whole bit with the, oh, you know, I'll be back and stuff, like the guy's a pencil pusher. He's just, you know, it's bureaucratic, and all the other cops, it's that, yeah, that false confidence of, oh, yeah, you're perfectly safe here, Sarah. You know, it's all in your mind. What are you on about? And it's all like, no, it's all real and you're all going to die. it's a way it turns on that, like, yeah, they are all a bit, they're just totally unprepared for it.
Dun, 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 dun. So, do you have some sexy coulda, woulda, shouldas for us?
I do, and I have some beauties. So, I've got a few for each of the leads. So, do you want to go for Terminator first or for Reese?
Well, I feel like we've talked about Reese over a beer. So, and also, that's probably the one that will shock, but I'm really interested to know who else could have ever been considered for Terminator other than the Austrian Oak.
So obviously we've talked about Lance Henriksen. So he didn't get the job.
He was obviously the first choice.
He was Cameron's first choice. So again, it's a conflicting thing. It's quite a popular trivia point, though. I think Cameron argues he wasn't under serious consideration, but O.J. Simpson, he was considered.
He's got great hands. Like, he's got strong hands. I think he could be good for the role.
Apparently Stallone was in the frame, because I suppose he would have been big off Rocky.
Might have struggled with the script, but yeah. An Italian Terminator! Okay, I'm sorry, but I love Sly. I can take an Austrian one from being... Arnie sounds robotic, whereas, like... an Italian Terminator. It needs to be a comedy.
You got a Uzi 9mm.
Stop, or my cyborg will shoot.
Love it. Harrison Ford and
Tom Selleck.
and Mel Gibson, apparently. So Mel Gibson would have been hot off Mad Max 2, or The Road Warrior, as it was known in the States. So they were all considered for the Terminator. Now, the list for Reese is really interesting. So Matt Dillon.
Wow.
Some guy called Kurt Russell.
The hair.
Christopher Reeve.
Oh my God, that imagine that film, Terminator versus Superman.
But I can kind of see
No,
Christopher
totally.
Reeve.
No, I'm kind of shut up and take my money.
Geordie Warbler Sting.
No.
No.
Christopher Reeve still got the part right now.
Bruce Willis.
No, still Christopher Reeve. But interesting, interesting.
What about Mel Gibson again?
Do you know what though? Sorry. Shut up, sugar tits. Bruce Willis, yes. Like if you think about it, like
In his prime.
Die Hard Prime,
This
definitely.
is pre-Die Hard.
Yeah, I'm saying so he would have been you could see him doing his John McClane, I'm a bit annoyed to be here. I've got a killing hangover. Look, Sarah, I've told you it's
Yeah.
gonna kill you. It doesn't think, Sarah. It doesn't. Can I get some aspirin?
Yeah, you can just imagine
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't, you can't reason with it. I could seriously see John McClane versus
Yeah,
the
make it happen. Make it out versus aliens.
And the Terminator is Samuel L. Jackson. Oh my God, we've got to go picture. Let's just go.
Make it happen. So yeah, they're your picks for Reese. And for Sarah, there was a few big names
Rod Stewart. Similar haircut, similar haircut of
So he lent her his wig. Thinks he's Rod Stewart. No, Rosanna Arquette, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Gina Davis, and Lee Thompson, also known as Lorraine from Back to the Future. So another time travel movie.
Wow.
So yes, I think so it could have gone some very different ways in terms of the casting.
Can you imagine how much of a melange that would be if you had Christopher Reeve as Reese
You're loving the Christopher Reeve thing, aren't you?
and Marty McFly's mum as Sarah Connor? I think
with with
that would be like the 6 degree Kevin Bacon
yeah,
go to, right?
in an alternative, what are you talking about in a multiverse?
What? No, I'm just thinking that film would have just like it's her from Back to the Future, it's him
It's
from
him from
Superman,
Superman,
and it's him from Terminator. No, this is Terminator.
and it's OJ in the middle. What's going on?
If
Oh, I would say we haven't really given much props to Linda Hamilton, but T2 is all about Linda Hamilton, and that is her movie. She is such a transformation in that movie. She's very much the damsel in distress in this, and it's a bit of a thankless role. She's just the woman running, pretty much essentially. But yeah, I say,
we do cover that a lot more in our Terminator 2 episode, I think, but that does sound familiar. It's been a while.
So yeah, I think we've said all we need to say about this film.
Yeah,
I
come on, guys.
mean,
We've only got another hour to go.
we'll cover the suspicious sequels and spin-offs in our Patreon episode. But yeah, this is a stone cold classic. It's one of the most important films of the 80s, in my opinion. It's a brilliant, It is, as an official debut for Cameron, it's amazing to see those foundations and see how they've evolved from, as you say, not only it's been, bits picked up off and borrowed from Terminator sequels that Cameron hasn't had anything to do with, but just to see motifs and things, things being crushed and the way things are framed and lighting and things that Cameron would go on, that's become, his signature style. So yes, I love this film. I still can't decide, I think I still do love the second one more. I think that's just more of a bombastic blockbuster. There's more to get out of it, but I still love going back and revisiting this.
Yeah, I think for me this is the to take it back, it's like if you you can't use it's like sh showing how you did something. It's like Terminator 2, you can watch that and say that's an amazing film, but it's when you understand this is understanding the craft for me, and I think like what he's been able to do, you see it much more in this film. And then it's almost like Terminator 2 is a successful film because he looked at all of the action films that are out there. All of the stuff we were all being shown, and you kind of get the feeling there's a competitive edge to Cameron that he was like,
Yeah.
Okay.
Must do better.
But also in terms of the industry, that's what I was talking about, how he's like loyal to the technology. I'm not just going to make, well, if I'm going to make a, you know, if I'm going to take the next generation of technology, then I am going to use it to its fullest extent. So I need something like Avatar. And even with Terminator, it's like Terminator 2, it's like, okay, I will make you a sci-fi modern day film, and it'll be better than any other action film that's out right now. And it's 90s, and he did it. So to me, he's like a champion of cinema. You know, it's like he comes out when he's needed. He comes out of the gates when he's needed, and what he delivers is nothing but, you know, gold. So very happy to have him. Very happy to go back and look at this film. As you say, I'm very happy to watch these films in close proximity of each other. Mm. I think what's a shame is seeing how much Cameron was able to learn in his earlier jobs and put into his films, and how much the sequels have learned nothing and they've just cut and paste. But we will cover that in our Patreon episode, which you've got to check out. Which we're still not sure if we're calling it Terminators, The Terminators, Three Men and a Terminator. We'll let you know.
I like Three Men and a Terminator.
That could be a great film featuring Steve Guttenberg, Ted Danson.
Tom Selleck.
Make it happen with AI. Just make it happen.
There's one thing I've totally forgotten to cover. But in when Cameron was in pre-production and shopping the script around, I think it was Orion, but the studio notes he got, they're like, oh yeah, we really like the script, but two suggestions. We think Kyle Reese should have a robot dog companion, or the other option is maybe add in some romance so it does well with the female market. And Cameron's like, I'll work on the romance angle.
Oh my God!
It's he best a friend robot dog for some reason.
Best friends are talking pat.
Just imagine that. Just like, oh yeah, it's a great film apart from the robot dog. So yes, coulda, woulda, shoulda, add in the robot dog.
I definitely think the Ron Howard.
The robot dog is voiced by Sylvester Stallone.
I definitely think that's definitely another homage to Terminator. So. Okay, well, thank you for listening. Check us out on all the channels. You can get everything that we do on our blog at retroramble.blog. You can get us on the dumpster fire that is Facebook. If you're still on there, like George and I are occasionally, we post links to the blog there. You can get us on Instagram.
The dumpster fire that is Twitter. I mean, X gonna give it to you.
X gonna give it to you. But most importantly, we are wherever you get your podcasts. And if you need more Retro Ramble in your life, you can get us at www.patreon.com. There's Retro Ramble. There's lots of episodes.
There's lots of extra Retro Ramble in your life. There's films that Charlie and I didn't watch first time around. There's film specials. We're going to do a Terminator special. So lots more there.
Where we're covering all of the juicy sequels, because all George and I have done for the last week and a half is watch Terminator sequels. So feel sorry for us, people.
It's true.
And what we're really grappling with is why somebody didn't come up with taking things off. Doing something different, but we'll get into it in the episode. Yeah. So thank you for listening. For this episode, I've been Charlie McGee.
I've been George McGee.
And we will see you next time. Unless a Terminator comes and kills one of you.
Bye-bye.